Good evening, everyone. It's good to see you again this evening. Good to have everyone with us, and I'd like to echo Kyle's comments. Josh, it is good to see you back with us. We've been talking this day about the Bible teaching on the birth of Jesus, trying to focus our attention upon some aspects of the birth of Jesus that sometimes people are not aware of, maybe don't understand fully. And tonight I'd like to direct your attention, if I may, to Matthew, the second chapter. The account here of the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem and the visit of the Magi. Matthew chapter 2 says in verse 1, beginning, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him.' And when Herod the king heard it, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And gathering together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he began to inquire of them where the Christ was to be born. And they said to him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet.'" In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet. The prophet, of course, that Matthew is referring to, the prophecy that is cited in the verses that immediately follow, is the prophet Micah. And I think probably most of us just look at this prophecy and maybe the quotation of it that Matthew gives as really just a prophecy that said that one day the Messiah will be born in Bethlehem. But there's so much more to it than that. There's so much more to that prophecy than just that. There's so much more to it insofar as its significance is concerned, if we will just look at Micah chapter 5 and that prophecy in its historical context, and even what was going on at the time in the nation of Judah when Micah was giving that prophecy. So to maybe help us appreciate what is being said here, I want to take you back, if I may, to the 8th century B.C., we're talking over 700 years before the birth of Jesus. That's the time when Micah was a prophet in that kingdom of Judah. And in fact, I have to say the kingdom of Judah to distinguish it from Israel, because first of all, to appreciate the significance of what's going on historically at this time, it's the time of the divided monarchy. It's a time when the throne of David is not ruling over all of the tribes. Rather, the 10 tribes of the north are part of their own separate government. And instead, the southern kingdom of Judah, those two tribes, they alone are ruled over by the house of David. So it is a divided nation during the days of Micah, when he grew up as a contemporary of the great prophet Isaiah. It's a divided nation religiously, not just governmentally. Because Yahweh is not honored by most of the people in either of these nations. In fact, they tend to be a pagan people. They bow down before other gods. It is a time when God's people have absolutely gone into apostasy. In fact, over and over again, that's really what we see throughout their history. It's reached a point now where God begins to have his prophets talk about the ultimate outcome of this kind of apostasy from God and his law. It's exile. It's being ripped from the land. And in fact, even as Micah was growing up in Judah, what was going on up north was something horrendous. But again, in keeping with God's prophecies. Because up north was the time of the Assyrian conquest of those northern tribes. And ultimately in 721 BC, that's when the northern kingdom was devastated by the Assyrians. That's when they were taken away into Assyrian exile. And that began this whole period of time where the Assyrians are afflicting not just those up north, but eventually even Assyrian armies coming down south into Judah. That's the period of time, that's what it was like for Micah as he was growing up in that particular day and time. And it's during this period of time that God calls upon Micah as well as Isaiah, to prophesy to the people. And in Micah chapter 4, this is what we read Micah saying, beginning with verse 9. Now, why do you cry out loudly? Is there no king among you? Or has your counselor perished that agony has gripped you like a woman in childbirth? Writhe and labor to give birth, daughter of Zion, like a woman in childbirth. For now you will go out of the city, dwell in the field, and go to Babylon. There you will be rescued. There the Lord will redeem you from the hand of your enemies. What God was having Micah prophesy and Isaiah and all the prophets at this time prophesy about was that the only solution for God's sinful people was exile. They would go into exile. God promised that they would ultimately be redeemed from exile. He always put that in there too. But their redemption would only take place after they went into exile, and he would redeem them out of exile. He talks here about the fact that they would dwell in Babylon. And again, a great prophecy here, because even though the Assyrians are the ones during Micah's day who are the major world power, it would not be Assyria that would ultimately bring the downfall of Judah. It would be Babylon. But it would be out of Babylon that God would one day call his people as he would seek to redeem them after their time of exile was over. I want you to notice the rhetorical question that is asked beginning in verse 9. Is there no king among you, or has your counselor perished? Is there no king among you, people of Judah? None that you can look to, none that can give you counsel, none that can lead you in the proper way. Well, when you think about this period of time in Judah, the period of time when Micah was living, there certainly were still kings of Judah, but most of them weren't much to speak about. There was, for instance, King Ahaz. He was the king of Judah when Micah was just a younger prophet. And of course, Ahaz, if you think about what the Old Testament has to say about him, he was a completely paganized kind of king. Had no respect for Yahweh, but had great respect for all the pagan gods and all the various aspects of pagan worship. And that's what he tried to bring into Jerusalem. That's exactly what he did bring into Jerusalem. And so this was the kind of king, the kind of leader that the people had during that period of time. Now, it's certainly true that Ahaz was followed by another king, Hezekiah, and we look at him and think about him as a great God-fearing king, and he was that. He was a great reformer king. He certainly was that. And yet, what we need to appreciate is that Hezekiah, despite his godliness, was not able to really lead the people back to Yahweh. Instead, the kind of pagan thinking that had just inundated the people of Judah, just like the brethren up north in Israel, it was still there, and Hezekiah was not able to rid the people of all of that. And so that question that Mike had asked, is there no king among you? Well, there's really no king among them that can really help them. In fact, Hezekiah was succeeded by his son Manasseh and his son Amon, and that just gives you an indication right there of the failure of King Hezekiah as a king to lead the people spiritually back to God. Hezekiah was faithful, but the people never really came back to God, because the son of Hezekiah, Manasseh, he immediately turned them back into paganism. And the people readily accepted that. And Manasseh, without question, was the worst king that the southern kingdom of Judah ever knew. And his son Amon just followed right in his footsteps. Is there no king among you? Micah asked. Well, of course, there was Josiah who followed Amon. And Josiah followed in the footsteps of Hezekiah. He was a righteous king. He was a reformer king. And yet, as far as being able to really counsel the people and lead the people into the service of Yahweh and bring about all of those blessings, Josiah wasn't able to do any better than Hezekiah was. God promised Josiah that he would not allow him to have to watch the calamity that would befall that southern kingdom of Judah. And in fact, in 609 BC, that's when Josiah died. And after that, that's when the nation began to go downhill. Josiah was succeeded by four kings. Three of them were his sons. One was his grandson. Josiah, after he was slain in battle, his throne was assumed by Jehoahaz. And that pharaoh of Egypt, Pharaoh Necho, was the one who sort of put him on the throne as sort of a puppet king. But he didn't last long. And then ultimately then another son of Josiah, Jehoiakim, he assumed the throne. And he was a worthless king too. No respect for Yahweh. Didn't listen to Micah, didn't listen to Isaiah, didn't listen to what the prophets were saying. Despite all that they were claiming about God bringing Babylon upon them, Jehoiakim didn't listen to all that. And 3 months after he died is when the armies of Nebuchadnezzar came in and captured Jerusalem. His son Jehoiachin, who inherited the throne at that time. Can you imagine inheriting the throne? 3 months later is when you're going to be captured by the Babylonians. That's exactly what happened to Jehoiachin. And so, again, these kings of Judah, that there's just no one who's really worth speaking of as far as a king. There's a few righteous ones, a couple righteous ones, but most of them have no regard for Yahweh. And by this time, it's really too late. In fact, after Jehoiachin is taken away into Babylonian exile, then you have Zedekiah, a third son of Josiah, who assumes that throne of David. And yet he again is an absolutely worthless king as a spiritual leader. No regard for Yahweh at all. No regard for Micah as a prophet. No regard for Isaiah as a prophet. And as a result of that, sure enough, in 586 BC, that's when God brings that ultimate destruction upon Jerusalem. And the Babylonians come in, the armies of Nebuchadnezzar come in, and they not just capture, they destroy the city of Jerusalem. And they destroy the temple of Yahweh. And God let him do it as a sign that he had no regard for his people. He was allowing this judgment to come upon them. And what's more, Zedekiah, the king of David's house, he was taken away into Babylonian exile, and the throne of David was cut off. The palace of David and Solomon, that mighty palace, was destroyed. And the throne of David was completely cut off. And that question that Micah had asked years earlier, it has an ominous kind of ring to it when you look at it in light of these events that took place shortly after Micah's day. Is there no king among you, or has your counselor perished? When Micah first uttered those words, there still was a king, just not very many kings worth speaking about. But eventually, it became literally true. No, there was no king. No king at all. Because the house of David had led his people into apostasy and continued to lead them into apostasy. And as a result, God ultimately sent them into exile and cut off the house of David. And there was no king, literally, on the throne of David. And it is in this context of Micah giving that kind of discussion where he said that ultimately God would redeem them, but redeem them after the Babylonian exile. It's in that very context that we come now to Micah chapter 5. Just a few verses after the verses we've just been looking at, Micah says this in Micah 5 verse 2. As for you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you one will go forth for me to be ruler in Israel. His goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. Therefore he will give them up until the time when she who is in labor has borne a child. Then the remainder of his brethren will return to the sons of Israel. And he will arise and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they will remain, because at that time he will be great to the ends of the earth. This one will be our peace. want you to think about what Micah had said. At that period of time when his nation is on the decline, when the last few kings of the house of David are not worth speaking about, he talked about a king, a new king, arising one day out of lowly Bethlehem. And I want you to appreciate the significance of this as you just think about the significance of Bethlehem. Bethlehem was a little village about 5 or 6 miles south of Jerusalem. It was really a nothing city, just a village, as I said. It had two claims to fame in Old Testament times. That's all. First of all, Rachel, one of those wives of Jacob, Rachel died there. And she was buried near there. So there was that tragic association. And also that little village of Bethlehem was the home of Jesse and his family. And Jesse was really a nobody among the clans of Israel, the people of Israel. His house was just a very small, insignificant house of people, just one of the crowd. And yet you recall that God, centuries earlier, had Samuel the prophet go to lowly Bethlehem and anoint the 8th son of Jesse as the next future king over all Israel. And David, who came from Bethlehem, David then was lifted from obscurity to then ultimately reign over all of the tribes and set up his throne in Jerusalem and establish this great dynasty. It all started with lowly Bethlehem. And think about what Micah is saying in his prophecy. A time when the house of David has failed. There is no king worth speaking of. No king who can ultimately accomplish what needs to be accomplished. And what God says is, little Bethlehem, once again, is going to bring forth a ruler from that house of David. And really, when you think about the prophecy of Micah in this context, you must see this point that God is really saying, I'm going to start all over again. Because when you think about it, David, the first of the kings of that house of David, he was born in lowly Bethlehem, and then all of his successors after that, they were born in Jerusalem. And the fact that they were born in Jerusalem was just a sign that they were part of this Davidic dynasty. And yet God is saying that great king whom I'm going to bring into the world one day, he's not going to be born in Jerusalem. No, he will be born at a time when the throne of David will have been cut off. It will be as if the throne was no more and God is having to start all over again. And so he will once again bring another David out of lowly Bethlehem and elevate him to that level of prominence. So that's what Micah is talking about, that little Bethlehem, too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you one will go forth for me to be ruler in Israel. His goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. Therefore he will give them up until the time when she who is in labor has borne a child. And I want you to think about the significance of this phrase. Then the remainder of his brethren will return to the sons of Israel. See, that's part of this prophecy too. When this Davidic king, when God starts over and lifts him up out of lowly Bethlehem again, then the remainder of his brethren will return to the sons of Israel. Do you appreciate the significance of that? You see, during Micah's day, it was a divided monarchy. The majority of the tribes of Israel had been ripped away from the house of David. And no longer was the throne of David ruling over all of God's people, but that would change. And when God would bring forth this king from lowly Bethlehem, then the remainder of his brethren will return to the sons of Israel. He would, first of all, the significance of that is that he would be ruling over not just Judah or not just Israel, but all of the tribes. They would all be under his authority, exactly as it had been originally when David was the king. But of course, Micah had also talked about that God would be redeeming them from exile. And the fact of the matter is that even though a remnant came back from Babylonian exile, there were still all of these diaspora Jews who were still scattered and still, so to speak, in exile, which just sort of symbolized that still, in a sense, they spiritually did not have their relationship with Yahweh restored again. But that would change. No, one day, this Davidic king, this new David, would come forth out of Bethlehem, and the remainder of his brethren, wherever they were, they would seek him again. They would return to the sons of Israel. Once again, God's people would be united, and that Davidic king would be ruling over them. I'm going to also focus your attention on this statement that Micah makes in Micah chapter 5. As he talks about this great Davidic king who would be born in Bethlehem, he says his goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. What's that mean? His goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. Does it mean that he himself is somehow more than just some ordinary human being? That he himself goes back to eternity, that his goings forth are long before even the time of his birth in Bethlehem? Well, surely it couldn't mean that. In fact, ancient Jews apparently never took it that way. It appears that the way that ancient Jews understood this prophecy, at least based upon some of the writings that you see in some of these ancient Jewish literature, it appears that they just took it to mean that, well, the idea of this Messiah, it was in God's mind prior to his birth in Bethlehem. That even in eternity, God, long before, he envisioned the coming into the world of this Messiah. So that it's just talking about the idea of him, the contemplation of him in God's mind. That's what was beforehand. But is it possible that it could mean more than just that? Could it really be somehow indicating that that Messiah king who would come, that he himself existed even before his birth in Bethlehem? You know, in John chapter 8, Jesus was having one of his many discussions with the Jews of his day in Jerusalem. Jesus, you will recall, would come to Jerusalem for the pilgrimage feasts, and whenever he would do that, it seemed, he was always embroiled in controversy with the Jews there who would accost him and verbally want to get into debate with him. You see that in John chapter 8, beginning with verse 53, for example. They say, "Surely you are not greater than our father Abraham who died. The prophets died too. Whom do you make yourself out to be?" Jesus answered, "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say, 'He is our God.' And you have not come to know him, but I know him. And if I say that I do not know him, I shall be a liar like you. But I do know him and keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad." The Jews therefore said to him, "You are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham?" Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." They thought Jesus was blaspheming. Jesus had the audacity to claim to be pre-existent, to have been in existence even before his birth in Bethlehem. And yes, Jesus, his goings forth are from long ago, from the days of eternity. Because what the Jews in Jerusalem on that occasion didn't understand, but what would be made clear after Jesus' resurrection, is that he was the incarnation of God himself. And indeed, the Holy Spirit had come upon his virgin mother and caused her to conceive miraculously, so that he was, in a very literal sense, in the highest possible sense, yes, the Son of God. He was God incarnate. And yes, Jesus, yeah, he saw Abraham. He was there. Because as Micah had prophesied so many centuries before, his goings forth indeed are from long ago, even from the days of eternity. Let me look with you at one final thing that is said here in this great prophecy of Micah. He says of that Davidic king who will be born in Bethlehem, at that time he will be great to the ends of the earth. This one will be our peace. He will be great to the ends of the earth. You know, that statement really can't be misunderstood when you look at it in the context of what the prophets and the psalmists so often said, because they talked about the fact that God's kingdom, the throne of David, ultimately was not just going to be a Palestinian kingdom with maybe just these few Gentile nations in that Levant region of the Fertile Crescent under the authority of David. No, no. The kingdom of God, the throne of David, would rule over all of the nations of the world. The borders of his kingdom would know no end from one horizon to the other. And those of all nations would ultimately bow down before him and bow down before his father Yahweh. That's what the prophets had talked about. And obviously Micah is talking about that same thing, that indeed he will be great. His greatness will extend to the very ends of the earth. That will be the extent of his dominion. Do you appreciate the significance then of who it is whom God has to see that star and to come and do obeisance to that child in Bethlehem? It's the Magi from the east. It's these wise men, these astrologers, these leaders of the Gentile world in the Far East who are as far removed as possible from any of the affairs of the Jewish people in Palestine. And yet, they're coming to pay homage to that child, to that future king. And it's all in accordance with what God had said beforehand. It really is just an inkling of the fulfillment of what Micah had talked about so many centuries before, that indeed the dominion of Jesus' kingdom would extend to the very ends of the earth. And yes, every knee would bow, not just those Jews, but all the Gentiles would bow before him and would recognize his authority. And that's exactly what the Magi are doing. It's a little foreshadowing of what Jesus' kingship and sovereignty would ultimately be. And he says, this one will be our peace. This one will be our peace. This one will be our shalom, is the Hebrew word. Do you recall when David had been lifted up out of Bethlehem and made the king over all of Israel, and Jerusalem became his capital city? Remember all the battles of David when all the enemies were defeated, and finally, after all those years of warfare, David then was able to bequeath to his son Solomon that kingdom, a kingdom that was at peace because every enemy had been defeated. And that's the reason why Solomon was given that name that was based upon the word shalom, peace, because that name Solomon means peaceful one, man of peace, because He didn't have to be a king of warfare because all those battles had been won. Every enemy had been conquered. And what you see here is Micah talking about how this one, this second David, will arise out of Bethlehem. And indeed, he will be great to the ends of the earth. It's not that he's going to then bequeath that to some successor. No, he himself will then, having defeated all enemies, he himself will reign over all of the world, and he will be our peace. He will be our shalom, and it will be absolutely this kingdom where God is honored and righteousness is honored, and there is no more sin, and there is no more rebellion against God, and everything is as it should be. And that's what Micah was talking about. And so when we think about the birth of Jesus in lowly Bethlehem, and indeed, Herod in his folly asking, where is this child to be born? And him being told, well, the prophet Micah said he would be born in Bethlehem. Do you appreciate now? It's so much more than just, well, Micah foretold where Jesus would actually be born. It's so much more than that. Indeed, this great prophecy talks about how, yes, the Messiah would be born in lowly Bethlehem, and that God would raise up Jesus, and he would be this great king who would unite all of the Jews and ultimately bring all of the Gentiles under his authority, and all would be called upon to submit to him, and all those who would refuse to submit to him, he would defeat, but he would then shower blessing upon all of his subjects who would submit to his authority. And he is indeed that great one from even the days of eternity. And that's who was born in this world 2,000 years ago. Whatever the date is, whatever time of year it was, we don't know. The Bible doesn't say. But 2,000 years ago, he's the one who was born into this world. That pre-existent one, God himself, who then grew up to become this great king and fulfill all of God's prophecies. That's what you and I have a chance to be a part of. I've said it many times from this pulpit, brethren, if you don't appreciate the fullness of the gospel story and have it excite you, if you're not excited about your ability to participate in all of this, then you just don't get it. And that's what we need to do, is to learn about all this and appreciate all this so that we can then be motivated to be the kind of dedicated followers of King Jesus like we need to be. The world doesn't get that. But for goodness sakes, we as God's people, we must get that. And I hope these lessons today have been a small bit of help to you toward that end. Is there someone tonight who needs to respond to the gospel in some way? Can we assist you in doing that? Hope you'll submit your life to King Jesus even tonight while together we stand and sing this song of encouragement.